Welcome to Words, Words, Words. This is your host, Robert Tinajero. This is the 30th episode, and on this podcast, every 10th episode, we recap the previous 9 episodes. And so I'm here with 3 buddies, family members. If y'all want to just quickly say your names and introduce yourselves.
Zach.
Tony.
Bob.
All right, so the first topic we're going to talk about, it this whole podcast deals with rhetoric, discourse, word choices in everyday life. And so the first one, it has to do with baby names. And all of us here at the table have kids. And so I guess I'll start with this question. So I decided to name my son after me and my dad. So he's Roberto José Tinajero III. And some people think that's awesome. And I know there are some people that think that that's a little ridiculous when you start adding on the third, and like it seems a little narcissistic. So we can start there. What do y'all think about me doing that? And then in general, what do y'all think about the importance of the name you pick for your kids? And why is that important, or any thoughts on that?
Sure, so I'll make a point. We named our daughter, our new daughter, a family name. We named after our father-in-law, my father-in-law, Raphael, and her name is Rafaela. And we just thought that it was important to capture some of our family history and heritage and give our child a good, solid foundation for her to grow her life on. And so it was important to us to sort of keep her name and keep her legacy in our family lineage.
And my wife came with a kid, and so I mean, whenever we started dating, he was already named, obviously, but he was a family name. I know, I mean, he's John. His dad's name is John, but he was actually named after a grandfather on his or great grandfather on his dad's side, so it's a family name over there too. And then I mean, we've talked about, you know, if we have another kid, what we'd name him or her, and him would definitely be a family name. But it wouldn't be a second or a third or a junior or anything like that. It would be kind of a play on names, and probably still wouldn't even go after first name, because like JD doesn't go after John. He goes at John Dawson JD. And the same thing would be if we had another boy, it would be Tommy Ben, but go by Ben. So that would kind of pay homage. So my dad is Tom. His name is Tommy Shane, but he goes by Shane. My grandpa is Tommy Ben. And then Kim's dad is Ben. So it kind of like play in all three of those.
Yeah.
So cool. That's kind of where we were at on that. But I don't know about the second or third.
Yeah. Likewise, my father had passed away, and I had told him on his deathbed that I would name my next child after him. And hence my daughter. His name's George Leland. And when she arrived, we named her Georgie Lee. Mm-hmm. So nice. Just cool. Again, and to honor him.
Yeah, I mean, I think the family names, I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, you're paying homage to people, important people in your life, and obviously having a kid, someone important in your life, and so it makes sense just to have those family names. And cool. You know, family names, you know, being your last name or some part of it's always been something that I think people have done.
What do y'all think some of these like kind of new age names, like Apple or Star, or like, do you all think that's ridiculous, or do you think every name was made up at some point?
I don't think every name was made up at some point. Names, you know, historically were an identifier to tell somebody where you lived, what sort of profession was in your history, or talk about a town. If you were George and you had a son, you were, you know, son of George, and that would have some kind of historical meaning. Mm-hmm. I think when people start getting into really diversifying their kids' names, it's almost like they're trying to impress their personality into an unborn person already. Sort of use their child as a commodity to demonstrate how original they can be, rather than just give the child a name that's important and meaningful to your family and let the kid develop on their own.
Either of you want to comment on that, these new age names?
I can see that. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, also, you know, as opposed to having whole bunch of Johns, you know, or a whole bunch of Toms or whatever, you know, having a little bit of something different. And sometimes the it's kind of weird how some people just kind of like, I mean, obviously you just know them as that name, and then they just kind of fit that name, and it kind of works for them. So I wonder if, you know, some of these people, like, you know, as we kind of move along, like, oh, that just kind of fits you, Apple, or whatever. Yeah. I don't know any apples, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Some new names, maybe, I don't know. I mean, you kind of grow into that name, so maybe, but I can see how it kind of is just kind of, you're kind of putting it on that person.
Yeah, cool. All right, we're going to move on to the next topic. So this is the only, like, political topic of the, like, nine we're going to talk about. So this one, I'm from El Paso, and so there was the mass shooting there a few months back. And so the episode I talked about was Trump's rhetoric on immigrants and how I think it was directly related to the guy that drove from McKinney to El Paso. And he had this manifesto, and it was very anti-Mexican, anti-immigrant. And so, right, Trump didn't put the gun in the guy's hands, but I think he was indirectly connected to why that happened. And so in the episode, I talked about my point of view. So I'm just interested in what you all think. If we can put the blame on a president or on another person for somebody's hateful actions.
You know, I don't... Yes, Trump's rhetoric plays into it. I think it's a lot of kind of where we are as a society and with, like, social media and things like that, that it kind of empowers some people to have some of these things and say these things and go, oh, cool, yeah, I agree with that, or whatever, and like the things you share and like the message behind it. And I think that kind of empowers some of these people to come out of the closet and go, it's okay for me to feel this way, when in reality it's not. And I think whenever, obviously, you have the president who, you know, controls a ton of media time, who also speaks that way and is kind of not careful with his words, has never been one who cares to be kind of that head of state kind of figure or question, or, you know, kind of go, you know, my words are going to matter. He's never been that type. He just kind of off the cuff is going to say what he wants to say and doesn't care if it's offensive, doesn't care if it's going to be something wrong, and then won't ever back down from it or say that he's wrong with it. And so, but I think that kind of just plays in with where we're at, where, you know, you've got people that are coming out of the woodworks and on social media and able to be empowered because we're able just to kind of curate our friends and defriend people that don't agree with us and just kind of keep getting polarized and go, okay, well, this pocket can kind of then rise up and this pocket can kind of rise up. And I think that's kind of where we're at on some of that. Mm.
You know, it's really tough. There's always been hateful acts under every administration,
sure,
regardless of who our leaders are. So it's tough to say if one person, as our leader of our nation, has really driven the acts of this one individual. Would this individual have acted out if there were different administrations? He may have. You know, it could be a product of our times rather than a product of our leadership.
Right.
So it is tough to say. It is tough to say.
Yeah.
If you can blame it on one person. Now, ultimately, we're all responsible for our own actions.
Right. Yeah. No. Ultimately, he is responsible for, you know, what he did, whether or not, you know, something else plays into it. But
yeah. And ultimately, is that his 15 minutes of fame,
right,
that he derived? Random.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that definitely plays into it too. Right. I mean, we glorify and publicize, you know, the shooter, you know, a lot of times too, mm-hmm, in these acts. And
yeah.
Is that a driving force for some of these people?
Okay. All right. We'll move on to a lighter topic. Before we move on, I want to know why I'm the only one drinking my beer. Because we're all sitting here, beer's in front of us.
I'm trying to be fair. I went and got another one.
Oh, you are double fisting it. Yes.
Because cheers. I knew I was going to choose this one. So.
All right. So next topic, no more politics. So this topic had to do with saying happy birthday. And so
this was an interesting
we all we all say happy birthday to those that are closest to us, but then there's this like next level of people that we interact with on social media, or like cousins or kind of acquaintances. And so one of the things that I want y'all to talk about is, one, how deep do you go in your arsenal of friends and family to spend the time to say happy birthday to somebody? And then how do you do that? Like, some people we feel like we need to say face to face. Like my wife, I'm not gonna wake up in the morning and like send her a text message when she's right next to me, right? Like, it's gotta be face to face. But then with other people, we feel like we need to text them. Other people, you know, we feel like right on Facebook, it tells you it's somebody's birthday and you can just like hit, say happy birthday. Or on Instagram, you send them something, or, you know, maybe some people still send birthday cards in the mail.
Do people really do that still?
I don't know. In our family, we send, thanks to my wife, we have a tradition that we send a birthday card in the mail. Okay. Yep.
How many do you send a year, do you think?
Dozens. Probably, nice. probably 50 to 60.
I am impressed with how many.
Probably 50 to 60 years.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And every birthday of anybody we care about goes into our shared Google calendar. And when that day comes around, we make sure. Nice. I mean, and my wife leads the charge, I have to admit, but they get a postcard in the mail.
Did you do this before you were married?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No, I did not. But
Christy always has. Yeah.
But it's been a really valuable sort of a social experience because it keeps you connected. And there is an art to writing a postcard. It truly is.
No, there really is. That's really cool and something unique and something that kind of, you know, has some meaning to it.
It's as easy as writing a text, but it's...
And it hangs on to some old school traditions, really. To go to the mailbox and to find that card in there from a loved one. It's like, this is really...
Do you still get birthday cards in the mail besides from Christy and Tony?
Mainly Christy.
Yeah.
No, and my mother, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? Well, there's something so cool about like getting in the mail and like, you know, you get so much just junk in the mail or packages that you've ordered.
Right.
Yeah. And to go, oh, cool, someone like wrote something to me or someone said something. Right? You know, like this time of year, right, Christmas, you know, people are sending out the Christmas cards. Yeah. That's always cool to grab one of those and go, okay, cool, if there's something... That was actually meant for me as opposed to just this junk advertising.
And so most people now, I think, send text messages or do it on social media. So
for sure.
Do you all ever send somebody happy birthday on like social media or through text and be like, why am I doing this? Like, I haven't talked to them in 3 years or...
I've pretty much stopped the social media happy birthdays because I feel like, I mean, it's just... I'm only wishing you that because I saw it on Facebook. Now, there are plenty of people that like... I make sure to go check, be like, oh, another birthday's coming up. Let me go like check when their birthday is.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not my calendar, but just going to Facebook and going, oh, it says your birthday's today. Let me wish you happy birthday today. Mm-hmm. I kind of stopped just, you know, those people wishing them happy birthday. I mean,
I know you're not on social media very much,
but I will send a social media happy birthday to someone who's famous, who I don't know personally, hoping that they will respond back.
Like who?
So it's selfishly.
Like who?
So like locally famous people in our governor of Connecticut, for example. Locally famous people in our area, hoping I'll get a response back. So it's selfish. It's really not.
Yeah,
that's
selfish.
How he obtains it's about his me. 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, exactly.
But I will make, I mean, I try to like, you know, the people that are close, it's either a call or a text. I mean, however we typically would communicate, you know, my friends or family, whatever that, you know, kind of relationship is, you know, if there's certain friends that we, you know, we mainly text, and I know that they're busy or whatever, I'll make sure to shoot them a text. And, you know, it's more than just the happy birthday text. It usually has something with it and, you know, probably some jabs or some shit talking or some, you know, something about what's going on or whatever. And then there are plenty of people that, you know, I make sure that, you know, they're getting a call and they're, you know, I'm not anywhere else and able to, you know, give them some time and talk with them or going and actually seeing them, right? If that's feasible.
Do you do the Facebook thing where it reminds you it's a birthday and you all...
No, I don't. I rely upon the Christmas calendar.
Ooh. Which has the family birthdays.
Which has the family birthdays all listed. And again, I truly send in a text message is most of the time the way I go. Mm-hmm. But anyone who has an inkling of meaning in my life, I try to make their day special when it's their birthday.
Okay.
I kind of look at it from that aspect.
Who's the...
But I do forget a lot, right?
Oh, what happens when you're terrible with dates?
And I find out, I'll still send that. Oh, hey, by the way.
And I was going to get to that. Like, how many days after somebody's birthday do you feel like you should still say happy birthday?
I think it depends on the person.
Zero.
I'll go up to two weeks.
But what if it's like a good friend you just forgotten? A week later, you say, I'm sorry.
So I'll make sure I call myself out on it. Well, you know, make sure that I'm sorry. And
And I didn't get a Christmas calendar this past year, so
I don't think any of us did.
So I'm in trouble.
So you brought up like selfish reasons, and I think I brought this up on the episode. I'm almost positive I did. Have y'all, we're all married now, but when we were single, did y'all ever use the opportunity to tell somebody happy birthday as a way to like connect with somebody you were interested in?
Oh, for sure, for sure.
So you're sure, like, just a chance, like, you haven't like, talked to him a long
oh,
time.
Oh, I haven't talked to you in a while. Let me shoot you happy birthday.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or any holiday even, right? It could be, you know, extend out to that. Where it's just a hook back in to be like, let me try and talk to you.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
No, not me. I wasn't interested in anybody until I met my wife.
Ah, sure. Just so y'all know, she's sitting about 5 feet behind him. Bob, do you ever remember a time when you were single, you used a happy birthday?
No, I don't recall any of that. But I would like to go back to when you asked how many days after the birthday has passed. How about if you reverse that? For example, I had sent a nephew happy birthday message, and it was a week and a half prior to his birthday, thinking it was that day.
What did he say? He's like, oops, you're a little early.
He's like, yeah, you're a little early. Well, but I also think that, I mean, being early or late, I mean, I guess maybe being early more so, or maybe I'm like seeing a good friend 3 or 4 days before their birthday because it's the weekend, and maybe we're not necessarily celebrating their birthday, but it's like, you know, taking the time out to face-to-face say, you know, happy birthday, you know, all this, and then maybe not following back up after that.
Yeah.
But
you better know, to wish in advance than after. You can wish somebody happy birthday because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
But when it's already passed, you can no longer wish. It's already gone.
I always put belated. I'm like, yeah, belated. Oh, I forgot. Yes, happy belated.
Still in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Well, what about what time in the day? Because if
true.
When do you send that text? When do you send a text?
Early, well, I bet all of us have done this when we're like dating somebody at 12:01.
Yeah,
like,
happy birthday. Yes. Got to be one of the first to say.
Yeah. But that is interesting to think if it's like, well, if it's a weekday, you're working, but still, you think about like, what time should I send this?
Right.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to the next one. So the next one had to do with the rhetoric of advertising, and so I found an article of. Right, we all know advertisers use imagery and different words to try to convince us to buy stuff. And so I guess my question is, so they'll use things like, this is the best, right? Or this is the only one of these, or this is guaranteed to work. So do you all think that stuff actually works? Like, aren't people smart enough to be like, okay, you're guaranteeing this, but that's what everybody says. Do you think that advertising works or doesn't?
Well, I mean, obviously,
either on
words,
you or
otherwise, companies wouldn't invest what they invest in it.
Yeah,
and we wouldn't like, you know, be suckered into those things. I mean, I know it works for me in like, you know, these cookies that I made. You know, it was the best chocolate chip cookie recipe, and then I read it and I was like, that sounds like a pretty good one. Let me try that one, and they turned out pretty good. But
so you
I know I was hooked in on that
best.
Because I saw best.
Even though you know,
yeah, I knew
there's
was,
tons
you know,
of recipes.
Well, there was probably the first 4 or 5 that said they were the best. You know, but you gotta go. Okay, yeah, let's get that one a try and take a look at it.
Or we can talk about advertising in general. Like, do you all still fall for? I see a commercial for something.
No,
like,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I need that.
Absolutely, I'll fall for it. And then I'll research the product and I look for reviews.
Okay.
And it's usually the reviews that hook me, but then I'm beginning to think, who are these reviews written by?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, are they within the company themselves, or are these real people actually doing it? And that's the big question I have still to this
day. Since you brought up reviews, do you listen, do you really pay attention to like Yelp reviews on restaurants? Or you're like, no, people don't know my taste? Or do you're like, oh, these 5 people said they have great tacos, so I'm going to go.
I'll read them. They'll influence me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The number of reviews really says it all. A restaurant has 5 stars and 1,000 reviewers versus a restaurant that has 5 stars and 2 reviewers. I'm going with 1,000 reviews.
Definitely, yeah.
You know, greater sample size.
But are you going to get convinced when the restaurant, you see a commercial and it says, best Italian food in the city?
Again,
worth trying. It's worth trying.
Okay.
The question I have
even
is
though you know
the
source
of those reviews.
Right.
That's truly the question I have.
Well, yeah, so when I'm, I mean, if we're talking reviews, like, so whenever I'm reading them, I like to read some of the worst ones and go, are these founded or did you just have like a bad trip there or whatever it is? Because a lot of times people will leave bad reviews and it's like, you probably just had like a really bad experience. You know, this place or whatever it was. Or you're just being like way too critical of something.
Yeah.
And then you read some of the good reviews and you're like, okay, hold on. Some of these, it's like, were you even actually reviewing anything or just, you know, leaving them a 5-star review for whatever?
Yeah.
But in terms of like, you know, advertising, I mean, it definitely hooks you in, especially like, you know, a lot of those buzzwords, I mean, they just catch your attention.
Yeah.
Even when you know that they're fluff,
yeah,
they catch your attention to go, well, maybe it is. Maybe that is the best. Let's look into it. Let's go read some of those reviews. And then I give something a chance that maybe I wouldn't have because you said it was the best.
True.
How about if they oversaturate the commercials? Example, you keep hearing over and over and over.
Yeah.
Does that make you inclined to go try that product or does it turn you away because you're...
It does frustrate
from hearing.
I think one, it depends on the product. So like if it's... like car insurance, right? Like there's 3 or 4 big ones that are advertised. Like if I go look up, I'm going to change my car insurance. Like those are going to be the first in my mind because I'm constantly hearing them. Yeah. I don't know some other small ones that could be just as good. Yeah. But on the other hand, sometimes a commercial can annoy me so much that I'm like, screw that product.
There's no way.
Like I'm not going to go because you made this stupid commercial.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on the market. I think people, in terms of insurance, that's a good point because they have the best advertising, 100%. But they're all kind of the same thing.
They are.
But when you stick with your one insurance for several years probably, and then you get fed up with the price and you think it's time to change.
Yeah.
There's only going to be 5 on the top of your head. You're going to go to one of those next. Yeah. So I think they're very wise to be persistent.
Right. Just to stay on just your mind. Hey, we're one of the other options.
Yeah.
Keep us in mind because they know that that's probably what we're going to do. That makes,
All right, move on. My next episode was about the exclamation point. And so I'm talking about text messages, emails, social media. How do y'all feel about somebody using an exclamation point? How many do you use?
I thought this was
interesting. When you're stressing something, like, are you putting 1 exclamation point? Are you putting 2, 3? Are you never using it? Are you putting them in emails? How do y'all use exclamation?
I use it, and I wish I would have used it more in writing. You talked about this. I mean, all kinds of writing. Like, you know, in like college and whatnot. It's an effective tool in writing. And then, you know, the other part of it being like how it's changed, I think is interesting too. Where you talk about like using 3, 4 or a whole bunch or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean,
is it effective? Like if it's used so much, it's like,
I mean, so is the period. So is the period effective?
I want to exemplify my point, depending on how hard I'd like to get my message through.
Would you use 1 or 2 or 3?
I will use 2 and 3 at some time.
Never 3. Never 3. Never 3.
Yes. Never 3?
It loses it after 2.
See, I like 3 if I'm going to use multiple. Oh, and also like the exclamation and the question mark together.
Never 3, okay. Even in the same even in the same set of texts, never 3.
So... I'm telling my daughter, I want you home now.
Yep.
It'll be...
exclamation point times 3.
Yeah. I think 3
is where I would go. Do you think that'll influence her more than if you didn't put any exclamation points? Or she's going to get home at the same time?
I think she would know, ooh, he's really serious about this.
So 1 is more serious.
I think.
2 is even more serious. 3 is the most serious.
Why not 8?
I have used 8 before.
I don't even use that. I use them to be like sarcastic and funny. Like I'm never like yelling at somebody.
I don't know if it's just sort of yelling
or emphasizing. Like it's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's necessarily just yelling. It's really just like
emphasis.
Yeah, I mean,
and the mediums. Well, the medium depends, but an email and text are completely different. If you use exclamation point, I think in an email, especially in a professional setting, it could an email exclamation point. It makes you sort of more excitable in your text. It makes you more less threatening. Levity to your email.
Yeah.
So I think it's important.
Are you going to jump in here? We have Bob's daughter.
I'm going to jump in here. I'm in college, so I feel like that introduces a different use of exclamation marks. For example, I have a roommate, and she uses them almost every sentence, no matter what she's talking about.
In her text?
Yes, in her text. And it's almost overkill, and I get easily annoyed with that.
Yeah, but for sure.
In my own texts, I'll use them to sound like happy, or like sound... Yeah, just happy about something. Yeah,
right.
You're like enthused about something.
So much gets lost in text, and that's how we
talk. I would more use it... I wouldn't use it if I was mad. I would... If it's just flat and I don't use any form of, like, ending point, I feel like that's mad.
See,
I feel
like since you brought up that you're in college, did you have to learn that in academic writing, you should pretty much never use an exclamation point?
Right. Or? Well, I mean, I grew up when... Like, when I learned that stuff, social media and texting wasn't still, like, such a big thing yet. So, like, we learned that in grade school, really. So, and social media came around when I was in, like, 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of already knew that basis of when to use it and when not.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of my students, when they write papers in my English classes, they still use a lot of exclamation points. And I have to tell them in that situation...
Like, they'll put, like, multiple together or one. Just one?
They'll put...
But see, I feel like they could be effective in that medium.
But what's interesting is you won't read any...
If it's used right.
...academic journal article that almost ever has an exclamation point. So well, it's kind it of, like, beat out of you.
I guess it would depend on what you're writing about.
No, any academic writing, you'll almost never see an exclamation point. Which is interesting.
Yeah, really.
Because in that situation, I mean, it's just kind of a unspoken rule. Like, don't use exclamation points.
But I feel like in texting, like you said, right, when you're going to say something serious, you're not going to use that. Or like when you're mad. I feel like when I'm mad, I'm like, that's the period. That's what I'm going to just like throw a little period on it. And...
I use a lot of punctuation marks just simply to, it paints the picture of how you're feeling, or it brings your words to life, if you will.
Yeah. Do you, in your text, or you all use a period all the time? Like at the end of a sentence?
Yes, I do.
Every time?
Yep.
You write full sentences?
I only do, like, if I'm writing, like, something lengthy, right? Or if I'm saying a couple different ideas, or like a paragraph.
Whatever you're doing, stuff. What are you up to, what are you doing later? Are you going to put a period between those?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, if it's full conversational text.
Right, yeah. If it's a full sentence.
Actually, I don't even know. Right. My phone does it for me.
Do you use periods?
Not usually. If it's one sentence, I won't use it.
Right.
But if it is, I don't want it to sound like it runs together and then I'm asking a different thing.
Yeah.
Because I will use a question mark if it's a question.
Yeah, do you all put question marks? So you're saying, what are you up to? Because I have a lot of friends that don't because it's not really necessary. Like if you say, what are you up to? It's obviously a question.
Is it necessary there? No, I feel like I would.
But I usually do.
I'm more inclined to use the question mark than a period. And I don't know why. But periods, I mean, unless I am saying... multiple things, I'm probably leaving the period off unless I want to emphasize the period there.
Cool. All right, well, let me move on. Two more topics. I'm going to skip a couple because I want to make sure it doesn't get super long. So the next episode, I talked about like quick social interactions when you are passing people. So like at work, when you're passing somebody you work with, or you're on the street and you're passing somebody. So sometimes... I'll say like hi, sometimes I'll say hello, sometimes I'll say what's up, sometimes I'll just do a quick head nod, like the upwards head nod, sometimes I'll do the downwards head nod, which is weird, I'll change it up depending on the person, sometimes I'll even like raise my eyebrows, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll do a quick like fake smile, like with no teeth, and so can you all think about at work or when you pass people in the street, what are the things that you do most often and how does it change depending on the situation or the person? Like when you pass somebody at work,
well,
we're usually going to say like, hey, how you doing?
In a professional setting, it's always always some kind of salutation. Always.
Like
because
what?
Words. Hello, how are you? And it's always a rhetorical question. If it's a question, it's a rhetorical question. I don't expect
them to
answer.
So neither of you ever answer?
I don't expect them to answer. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Two rhetorical questions. How are you? How you doing? No answers.
No answers.
Just
two rhetorical
questions.
Okay.
Yeah. Always, I think there's something comforting about the words. It's a next level of acknowledgement.
What if you're not at work and it's just somebody you're passing in the street? And it's
stranger?
Just two of you.
Stranger?
Yeah.
Eye contact in the small.
Okay.
Always acknowledgement. Always acknowledgement.
Yes, I always choose to acknowledge someone who's around me.
Do you usually, if it's a stranger, do you usually say hi?
How's it going today? How's it going today, my man? Hello.
Do you expect an answer?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, it is funny to get like the, you know, you'll say, how's it going? And basically the same response back, right? Mm-hmm. Both rhetorical questions coming at you.
But,
and no one answers either one of them.
We know then, once in a while, someone will answer the question.
Yeah.
And who knows what that can open up, right. Especially at work in a professional setting.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I mean, thinking about like, you know, my work, it's a highly professional situation, but then also at times it's super casual in weird settings. I mean, it's where we have, you know, at any given time I'm cutting through the courtroom and I'm talking to, you know, a district judge and, you know, good morning, judge, how's it going, you know, kind of thing. And then in my workroom, I've got any number of defense attorneys that I may see 20 times a week. And, you know, I'm sitting there trying to get work done, working on something else, and give them just a head nod, say, hey, what's up, you know? And so it kind of is a really weird situation where you've got kind of all of that going on where, you know, someone's just kind of getting a heads nod, hey, give me a second, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then super formal as soon as you pop through. And then, you know, but also if you catch, you know, someone in the back hallway, you know, it's kind of a little different salutation.
How about when you're at work and you're passing somebody for the fifth time that day?
Right.
Do you still feel like you gotta say a little head nod, a little hi, or you're like, no, I'm passing them?
Always acknowledgement.
But does it change? Like the first time you're like, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And then at the end, it's just kind of like a quick.
Yeah, it does. It lessens throughout the day. The intensity or the magnitude of that salutation lessens throughout the day. But always acknowledgement.
Okay.
Always. Has to.
How about you, Bob? When you're passing somebody at work, and it's the fifth time you're passing them that day, are you still acknowledging? Does what you say to them change?
I guess I really don't know. I guess sometimes I do, and sometimes we just walk on by.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, in my job, my office is the end of like a long hall, so I'm walking by the same handful of people all day. And so I feel like by the third time, I'm like, I still want to acknowledge them, but sometimes we just walk by each other. Sometimes I'll, not to be mean, but I'll like pull out my phone and I'll be looking at my phone while I pass them. There's two people I work with, never acknowledge me. They just walk with their heads
down. Even in the morning. First time you see them, they're acknowledging.
They just walk with their heads down, and I'm like, and I think they do that to everybody, so it's not just me. But I'm like,
you sure?
That's kind of messed up.
Totally messed up.
Who knows?
And if they ever came to you for a big favor at work, you'd be less likely to do it for them because they never acknowledge you at work.
Yeah.
And that's why it's important. You always acknowledge, especially at work.
Okay, I just thought about this. I don't think I talk about this in the episode. What about handshakes? Like when you probably won't do it with a stranger, but when you pass somebody at work, do you ever shake their hand or give them the like dap or like
we've gone
give
more
them
to
a
the
hug
fist bump.
Or fist pump's your thing?
Yeah, the fist bump more so just because everyone's becoming more of a germaphobe. Right. So you're getting away from the handshake to more of an elbow or fist bump.
You still do elbow? I don't know if I do elbow.
Still do elbow.
No, I don't do elbow.
If someone says like they're sick, I'll be like, all right, cool, we'll get you the elbow.
But even if they're not sick, do you ever do fist bump?
Yeah, most of the time not. No.
There's some people that I'll fist bump with if that's what, I mean, you kind of get that. It depends on the
crowd. Yeah.
But then there are a handful of people that, you know, want to shake hands, you know, because I mean, I come in, there's just
do you ever do this one that like cup in their hand or you're not close enough to anybody at work?
There's a handful of attorneys that'll come in and we'll want to, they'll just, you know, every morning they'll want to come in and just kind of, you know, shoot the shit.
Give a lot of bro hugs.
Say what's up. Yeah, I mean.
You do that all at work?
It's kind of a little something different, right? I mean, that's just, but you can tell real quick that's, you know, and I don't know how to know who it is, other than you kind
of. Have you ever been in situations?
Get that vibe off to one
another. Been in situations where you don't know, like each of you is doing a different handshake? Because I'm in a basketball league on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so there's guys I see on a regular basis, but I don't necessarily interact with ever. And so like after a game I played against some guy I've never interacted with too much, and one might come in with a handshake, the other one's coming in with this, and then one's like trying to do that, and then one's like trying to do the bro hug or whatever.
What I've found is just when you awkward. Establish one sort of handshake with a person,
you stick to
you it. Kind of expect you kind of that every time. even if it's fitting for the situation.
But sometimes you forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if you come in and they're messed up, you're doing one, he's doing another. Oh,
yeah.
Just roll.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what is interesting to see is whenever there's a handful of you around.
Respect.
Yeah.
There's a handful of people around, and maybe you and this one person have, you know, kind of the, oh, let's, you know, clap, bring it in. And then the next person, they're not so sure that that's what it is.
That's
and
what they're
going to get.
Yep. That's right.
Or maybe they don't do that, but maybe then they just go with the handshake, you know?
Have you all ever had like a special handshake with somebody, with a friend?
My brother and I have a secret handshake.
Oh, nice.
My youngest brother and I. So we have a different relationship, right? We're like 14 years apart, 15 years apart.
Uh-huh.
And ever since he was like really young, we developed a little like secret handshake where we like kind of clap, pull it apart, blow it up, and then come back in for a little like shoulder like bump.
Nice.
And
I have a random.
To this day, I mean, he every time we see each other, just wants to just
let's
do the quick boom.
I actually have a secret handshake with my niece of all people. Like, we started one day. It's nothing too complicated, but she's like the only person I know that I have like a secret handshake with.
Yeah.
And then I'm in a fraternity, and we had a little secret handshake. But yeah.
It's kind of a little fun greeting.
Yeah, it is.
You know, and then you know what it is.
Yeah. You see that, and then that's like, you know, there's a bond between.
But it causes problems too, because I got a handshake with a buddy, but he's also got a mutual friend of ours. And so sometimes I'm not sure if he's going to give it in public or what, and it causes a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. How often does he give you that, or do y'all do that handshake?
Yeah, we do the handshake, and then the next guy doesn't know if he's supposed to do that too, or
he doesn't know
what. He doesn't know it.
Yeah.
It's causing problems.
All right, last topic has like three little subtopics. So this one has to do with signage and some legal cases. And so the first, I found an article that talks about, you know, how people have beware of dog sign on their front yard. And so if, let's say, somebody has a beware of dog sign in the front yard and their dog bites somebody in their yard, do you think that the beware of dog sign will help them in a legal case? Or, and at first I thought for sure it would help them because they're giving people a warning. But then I read this article and it said, well, maybe it kind of hurts their case because they're kind of saying, I know my dog is aggressive.
Right.
You need to be aware of this dog. And so the person that got bit could say, you even know your dog's aggressive.
Right.
You got to put this sign up.
No.
So do you think, let's say you were a judge and somebody had a beware of dog sign in the front yard and their dog bit somebody that was jogging by, or a kid ran up to the front yard, do you think it helps or hurt their case?
Well, yeah, I'm sitting across the table from a lawyer.
Yeah, I feel like he should answer last.
He's got to go last.
But what's interesting is that it said in different states, even different counties,
for sure,
there's different rules.
So. I look at it, hey, the message was there. You didn't listen to it.
But what about somebody that says, no, you put that sign because you know your dog's crazy?
Well, he is, but he's in my yard.
Yeah, and I warned you.
Right? That's kind of how I see it.
I don't know. I mean, as a golfer, you see houses like along golf courses, and I always wonder, like, what's the, if their house is getting smashed up by golf balls, what's the legal sort
of... But don't come in my yard.
Jurisdiction there. I don't know.
So on like that?
Yeah.
If like they are at a known hazard, so like they kind of knew that was going to come. It's kind of the legal principle there.
But what about the dog sign?
But
I mean, if you get bit by a dog, I don't think anything.
Do you think
I can go to Hobby Lobby and buy a sign? I don't think that should help my case. No.
No.
I would say keep your aggressive dog away from people.
But what if it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's going to be your issue, right?
But I'm not saying it just happens out of the park.
Is the yard
I'm saying
fenced?
Your front yard. It
comes on your front lawn?
Well, so the best legal answer you can ever give is it depends. Because, I mean, that's just always what it is. It always depends.
But what do you think? What if you had a beware of dog and some teenager jumps in your front lawn and gets bit? Would you say, read the damn sign?
It depends.
On what?
It really does, right? So, right, I mean, like you said, right, if the owner knows their dog's aggressive and knows they're going to bite anyone, anything, anywhere, well, potentially they have some duty to mitigate the possibility of that, right? And maybe it's enough. And then all of that's going to be a fact question, right? If we're talking about some kind of legal lawsuit of,
did they do their duty, whatever that, you know, standard of care is going to be? Because it's going to depend, right? Was it in the front yard? Was it like you said, right? Was it fenced? What was the circumstance for this? Did I just have people over? And just because I had the beware of dog sign out there, well, I invited you over. Right. But I knew my dog was dangerous. And then, you know, I mean, so all that's going to just kind of factor into that. And,
yeah.
But, you know, like you said, it could play against you, right? Just because I put that sign up, well, I knew my dog was dangerous. And, you know, it's not okay to, like, set booby traps in your backyard. The law's pretty clear on that, where you can't just, you know, someone hops over your fence and there's a landmine for them all around there, right?
Well, what if you had to wear landmines?
Fence, right,
darn. But you can't get those out of my backyard.
You can't do stuff like that. Yeah. Where you have like these just.
But a dog and a landmine are
even if you
different.
Warn them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, sure, they're different, but it's the same kind of thing. Just because you warn them doesn't mean that it's necessarily okay.
I was thinking of running electricity through my fence.
Right?
Come on.
Yeah. What if you have a beware of dog sign on your front lawn because your neighbor's got a crazy dog?
Yeah, maybe. All right, let's jump to the second legal case here. So this one's a lot more serious. So there was a sheriff in Georgia in a county, I forget what county. So Halloween's coming around. He makes these signs to put in front of the yards of sex offenders that says, warning, no trick-or-treating at this address. And he went and put these signs in the front yards
he
of all these sex offenders.
Put it into their yard?
He put it in their yard. And so the article talked about how sheriffs have a lot of leeway in being able to advertise the names and addresses of sex offenders and putting their pictures on the internet. But these sex offenders sued saying, no, you are, you know, this is going too far. This is unconstitutional. You can't put these signs in our yard. Like, that's, you're mocking us. You're embarrassing us. And so what do y'all think? And obviously, if you're saying, no, they can't put the signs, I don't think that you're defending sex offenders, right? Nobody's doing that. Mm-hmm. But do you think that the sheriff should be able to put these signs in the front yard?
I mean, on that premise that without defending sex offenders, we trust our legal system to put in place penalties for whatever offenses that criminals have faced. And so if these people are in our society having faced these charges and dealing with whatever penalties that came with it, I think that we still have to respect them as individuals. That's still their right to be home and not be labeled as such. So I don't think
The sign didn't say sex offender lives here.
Right.
It just said no trick or treating at this address. Does that change anything for you?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. But because why? Because where I live, you know, people of all ages come and trick or treat, you know, and if an 18-year-old comes to my house, a 19-year-old comes to my house, now I have to decide, like, now we're talking about what's the age, the right age to come trick-or-treating. So I just think, you know, you've paid your dues, you've paid your sentence, whatever. Now you still should be respected. Your privacy should be respected.
I don't know. I think the special circumstance in this case is the fact that it's Halloween, it's trick-or-treating, mm-hmm. where young children are coming up to a known sex offender's house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They ought to have that warning.
But also, sure. I mean, parents
so
should
would
also...
So would you nationalize it and say every county in America, the sheriff has to put this sign in a sex offender's front yard?
Well, because, I mean, if you think about what we already have in place is, I mean, you can go online and you can look where registered sex offenders are mm-hmm. reporting they live.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's different than that sign.
Well, yeah, it's very different. So, I mean, how far do you allow that to go? I think would be the point, right? Where do we decide where that should go, yeah. right? I mean, should we put the why not have the sign all year?
Yeah, exactly.
Kids could accidentally go over there at any given time,
or why not make them wear a T-shirt?
Right, scarlet letter, right? Exactly. Bring that back, right? I mean, because you essentially have that with registration, right? And there's a number of offenses that get you on for registration for life, registration for 5 years, 10 years, 15, whatever it may be, depending on the jurisdiction, the state. They all have different requirements for registration, and a number of acts could end you up on there, not necessarily just something that would be with kids.
Yeah.
Too. Right? So there's also that at play. And
yeah,
so
part of
what,
me,
what do you do about yeah. that? Right? Are you just putting that sign on Halloween for particular sex offenders? And I don't know what that if that changes any of the analysis on
I don't know
what's going on with.
Yeah, I can see the side of where it's going a little too far to put the sign in the front yard, but especially now with a kid, like I don't know, I'm like screw that. Like you but did what you did. I'm not. If you got a sign in your front yard, you earn getting that sign.
But yeah, if exactly. right? But if that's a, that right but if that's a thing right. as a parent that's important to you, then you should also do your. There are these systems in place that you can know that you can know this information, True. And True. You should really take it upon yourself.
But again, how often is that the case? I mean, on a Halloween, especially. If,
right.
Yeah. So only once a year. I could get online and like search the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And know what houses
are sitting. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying.
But so then why have the sign?
Then why have the sign?
Yeah.
That's tough. It's simpler for a lot of people, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just it's.
But then the other side of that would be what happens when, so you know, someone is required to be a registered sex offender, okay, and. You can imagine for that person, it's probably difficult to find housing. So they live with cousin whoever, or girlfriend whoever, or whatever, who owns their home. Yep. And then maybe they move out.
But
and
do you know
they, and
how...
And then they don't register again, or they don't change their address.
Yeah.
So then that address is that.
Yeah.
So then now Aunt Margaret's house, or whoever, has got that sign out there, and he hasn't lived there in a year. And he's got a warrant out because he has not... updated his registration. And I mean, is that necessarily fair to that person that took him in for X amount or her?
What about other what about other charges? What about gun charges? What about violence charges? What about drug
Domestic
charges?
Violence, DUI.
Those are all things that could harm our children. You wouldn't want your child.
We don't have any registration in place for those people.
So
most
put a,
of the time,
do we put a list in front of everyone's house of any offense?
I think with the predators of children
for sure.
Yeah,
that's, and connecting that with Halloween.
And connecting that for with sure. Halloween, that's all. I'm just drawing that correlation right there.
Yeah,
for sure.
No, no,
and,
tough.
And that's why we
tough.
Have that registration in place, right? Because we have that recognition of this person's been a predator before in a very, you know, vulnerable situation, and we should all watch out for that. And,
all right,
and you should know about that.
We're going to jump to the last signage case here. This one's not as serious, but still interesting. So I found another case in Portland where I forget who it was, like maybe the city manager or somebody decided to put up signage in front of buildings that didn't have reinforced masonry, which helps during earthquakes. And so it said, this building does not have reinforced masonry and is... extra dangerous during earthquakes, right? And so they put it on, like, especially older buildings, right? And some of them were businesses, some of them were like housing, like apartment complexes, because that person and the mayor thought our citizens should be informed about which buildings could get destroyed in an earthquake. And so those people that own those buildings sued the city saying, no, we don't want this signage on, you know, the front door of our business because people might be scared to come in here. And I think the bigger issue is like the places that were being rented out, right? People might be nervous, like, I don't want to live in this building if it can be, it's not that safe when an earthquake's going to hit. And I'll tell you what happened. The city council voted that the city had to pay like $350,000 to pay the legal fees for the owners of those buildings. So they kind of won. They didn't win money
for themselves.
Did they take
the sign down then after that?
Honestly, I don't know. It didn't say. It just said they won that legal case to get their legal fees paid. And so that's the kind of way it went. But do you agree with the mayor that no, we got to inform our citizens what buildings are more dangerous during earthquakes? Or do you agree with a building owner saying, no, why are you scaring people away?
I would just wonder what, you know, I know nothing about earthquakes and reinforced masonry versus these older buildings or whatever building, right? So that would be my first question is, what's the language in the sign and what's the basis for what you're
saying. Well, the sign said this building does not have reinforced masonry. But it's more dangerous during earthquakes.
But how much more, right? If it's not telling you how much more, you know, what's more dangerous, right?
But you want like a scale of danger. Well, no, but I'm just saying
if you put like this is more dangerous, well, sure, to a lot that could scare away people. When if it's only, you know, whatever, you know, a slight percentage more dangerous, then maybe it's not worth advertising to people that it's, you know, more dangerous, or and maybe that does more harm than good. But I can get the utility in warning people, like, hey, you're in a building that, you know, especially you're in you know, a place that's susceptible to earthquakes, you know, hey, this building could come down. There's definitely some utility.
I don't think you need a sign. If I live in a place that's prone to earthquakes, just beware anywhere, any building you go in.
Yeah. But there's some buildings that are much more equipped to handle earthquakes.
Putting the sign up, then it's up to the consumer to determine what the level of that, the degree would be for injury to themselves.
So do you like the idea of the sign? So people can at least know, okay, I need to do a little more research on this building.
Yeah, I guess it would all depend on the neighborhood you're even going to move into, because right. You know the newer neighborhoods would be the code. Mm-hmm. And the older ones, you're taking that risk. I don't know that you'd need a sign.
You don't think a sign is needed?
I don't think if I live in an area like that, or I'm moving to an area like that, I'm doing my research first. If I'm moving to San Francisco, for example, moving into an older building, because my rent's cheaper, I kind of know what the risk I'm taking is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it, because I think the sign might be going a little too far, but I wouldn't mind the law that says you have to tell people about the building code as it's connected to earthquake safety.
You know, it's just like the other examples with the signs. Then maybe that could be written into the lease, but to put a sign on the front of a building is different.
It is different, yeah.
Well, and then you wonder how much people are actually even read the sign anyway.
Yeah, I don't want to. If I was going into a business, I wouldn't care. I'd be like, 10 minutes I'm going to be in this business.
Right.
I don't think an earthquake's going to hit. I'm fine. But if I was renting, I would think about that.
You would hope that'd be written into the contract that you signed.
Right.
Well, I don't even know if that's.
And I wonder if that's
case.
Different than if it's something in the contract about, like, you know, hey,
this building was written before a certain code.
Before a certain code. Yeah. We're grandfathered into XYZ.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. All right. Cool. But I like I said, I just wonder, like, the whole this isn't reinforced masonry, more dangerous. What's more dangerous, and what are my risks? Yeah. And maybe that's supposed to prompt me looking into it as a consumer.
Yeah, I would think the consumer, it's on the consumer to discover, find out the information they need.
True. I tend to agree with that more, but I think
I agree with that, but I just wonder, does a sign serve that purpose, or does a sign just kind of scare people away?
But then at what point?
I think it brings to their attention.
But we buy all sorts of things that have like warning labels. Right. I'd say don't. If it's something with a plastic around it, don't let a young child play with this. Or
I mean, the sign matters too, right? We watch a car commercial and we see a sign that's microscopic.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. The skull. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, those are all the topics.
Do we end on smiley face?
Do you want to do smiley face?
Yeah, it's in the smiley face.
Okay, there's one more. I assume we still have time on this recording. Yeah, I think we do. Okay, so there was a couple I skipped, actually. You really want to do smiley face? So one episode was on it was kind of the history of the smiley face emoji. And I didn't even realize there's a difference between an emoticon and an emoji. So emoticon is the old school emojis where you put like the colon and the parentheses, and that's a smiley face.
Yeah.
So that's an emoticon. An emoji is the actual like little image, right? The little yellow face with a smiley face. And so, first of all, I guess we can talk about that. Do you all ever still use the emoticon? And do you remember a time when you used to use it all the time, and now it's just all emojis? And then the second question is, how often do you use the smiling face emoji? And which one do you use for what situations? So like, there's a regular one, and there's the little red cheeks.
Emoticons, the only ones I would now still use would be just the smiley face or sad face. And I don't.
But you still do it?
Every once in a while, and I feel like I don't know what the trigger is to use it.
Text an old person.
Maybe.
But even old people can see the emoji.
That's so wrong.
You don't know if they're gonna get that.
Did y'all ever use the colon dash close parentheses? So it had like the nose.
Nah, I use the A equals sign D.
A equals sign D.
It's all eight. I ever used.
Oh, yeah. So the eyes.
Yeah, eight equals sign D. Yeah. Eight.
Yeah, the D was like the big mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the smiling. I never used that.
You
totally
missed it.
I did.
What about you, Bob?
I don't know what's
old. I never used any equals.
I still don't use them. I still don't use them.
Equal sign.
Ah, that, yes. Now I know what that was. Yeah. Yes.
Now it's the eggplant emoji.
The eggplant. Now it's the eggplant emoji. How about the...
Which, that's a whole other, like, interesting thing. Where, like, it's like...
Yeah, the eggplant.
Now that's used for a whole other purpose.
That is used for a whole other purpose and other.
It's funny how some of those have taken on lives of their own to, you know, just, you know.
On like the peach.
Right. We'll just, you know, we will grab onto things and go, this now means something.
Yeah.
And everyone gets it.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's just amazing how that those, that imaging has taken on its whole new language.
Do you all use the smiley face emoji often?
Never.
Never? Do you ever use it, Bob? The smiley face?
Yes, I do.
Do you use the one with the red cheeks?
I use several of them. I use the laughing tears. I use the big, wide open smile showing teeth.
When do you use teeth versus no teeth?
I just like them really laughing.
I use the one with the no teeth tear laughing.
Well, if I'm, it's more of a... how would I describe that? It's more of a snidely laugh.
You know which one I hate? My wife is here, and she uses it a lot. The little squiggly mouth.
Oh. Oh, like an anger mouth?
Like the, no.
Like when I draw a bad picture.
Yeah, like, oh, this is silly or crazy. I don't know why that bothers me.
Why it bothers you?
I don't like that little squiggly
mouth. You don't understand what it means.
I do understand what it means, but it just... Yeah, see? She doesn't like it either. Do y'all know which one we're talking about?
It means
So the faces I use are just like the little crying one, the crying, like with one little like actual sad one,
yeah,
little kiss with the heart, and then the kind of like the with just kind of your teeth showing.
I like the guy with just a straight line. It's like meh, or like this is dumb.
And then I also like the one with just the eyes and no mouth. I don't know why I like that one.
What? What do you use that for?
For just kind of like a, I don't know, you know?
Like I have no reaction?
Yeah.
And it's cool, he's doing it right now. You can look at your like most used emojis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you find that the ones you use most with another person, you get those back in return? Or they use their own set of favorites?
Yeah, so there's like three or four I use with like one of my best friends, Chris. And there's like three or four I use with my wife. And there's like three or four I use with like my other set of friends. In the group chat.
And you get those back?
Yeah, they tend to be the same, similar ones that you're using.
So, that's interesting.
I feel like people have their own emojis that they use. I don't know if they send that back to the same ones. In my experience, like either someone's like super into their emoji responses or they're not. And maybe if they're not, they'll mirror back with you some.
Do you think younger people use more emojis or less emojis?
For sure. 100%
more. A lot. 100% more.
For sure.
Yeah. Why do you think that is?
No, the 100 emoji more.
Oh, the 100?
Right here. It's my number six.
Okay.
But yeah, young people use more of that visual.
Why do you think that is?
It's something I had to learn. I had to learn. I didn't grow up with that.
I mean, I think it's just part of sign language. I think
do we want to hear from our young person
over
here?
I think it's just part of the...
Like, do you tend to see that older people use less emojis?
It's part of how, like, you communicate more in text. You need more to communicate what you're saying.
Paint the picture. Yeah.
I think it depends on the person.
For sure.
It also goes for, like, how many emojis do you use? And I think I'm on the lower scale. Like, I don't use that many. But again, this roommate that I have uses one after every sentence in her text.
And also a lot of exclamations, right?
Yes. She does along a lot. With
that
her
sounds very annoying.
She's a very happy person, which is not a bad thing. But say, like my parents, they don't use them that much. I mean, unless they're trying to emote more than what their text is getting across. Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? Because, like, we're all people and we're all communicating.
I don't know. I feel like a big part of text is that you don't actually get the reaction right. of people, and it's hard to read texts, even though you're really
You can interpret them differently.
Yeah. Yep. So an emoji helps, like, show what they're feeling.
What few emojis?